When we talk about Asia's biggest emerging digital markets, the conversation tends to circle around China. But if you're not yet paying attention to India, you will be soon. With 1.2 billion people, half of whom are under the age of 25, India is poised to shake up the internet in ways that may have an even greater global impact than its neighbor to the north. Because unlike China, India's not hidden away behind a great firewall, and its internet culture is just as idiosyncratic. Today, I talk with Hasit Shah. He was formerly a producer at BBC News in London, and he's now a research fellow in journalism innovation at Harvard's Berkman Center, where he's developing an innovative new mobile news platform for Indians inspired by comic books. Hasit joins me today from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hasit, hi. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Patrick.
Let's start with an interesting observation that grounds much of your research. You've noted that unlike most of the world's major nations, India's newspaper industry has been growing and TV news ratings are up. How can we explain this in today's digital market?
Well, the first thing to be clear about is that India doesn't really have a digital market. Only about, at most, 20% of the country has an internet connection. And those people tend to be, well, will definitely be the among the more affluent members of society, better educated, possibly English speakers, who have a proper internet connection and are able to access news and information from around the world. But most people, for most people, news is a valuable commodity. Indians like the news, they watch it and read it in big numbers, they discuss it amongst themselves. But the traditional distribution networks, TV, radio, and newspapers, are going to do well because they can penetrate every single corner of the country. Where the internet can't reach yet, newspapers can, and when TV can and radio can.
So those traditional media outlets, television, radio, newspapers, advertising for them is actually growing, and they're doing just fine.
Yeah, they are. I mean, in India, advertisers spend about 10% of their budget on media advertising in digital. And you compare that to the US, where the figure's around 30%. So there's a big gap. Advertisers don't yet have faith in digital. And that's partly because it's just not that big a market right now. I mean, it will be one day, and the rise of mobile and the ability for people to connect to the internet on very cheap devices that they can carry in their pockets will be a game changer. But for now, right now, today in 2015, that still isn't the case.
Let's talk about the rise of mobile. You've mentioned that the smartphone market in India is exploding. And I know a lot of that is not necessarily with just American and Western technologies like the iPhone, but with a lot of those from China and elsewhere. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Yeah. The feature phones that we're used to, the old Nokias that we're used to in India, and which became the primary, you know, mobile communication tool, overtaking landlines a few years ago, are now slowly being replaced by cheap smartphones, which cost $30, $40, $50. They're not going to be iPhones. They're unlikely to be Samsung or LG. In other words, they're not the high-end, really high-quality handsets that we're used to in the US or Australia or the UK or anywhere else. In that market, you've got lower end, but still very functional and pretty good Chinese, Indian, and other manufacturers stepping in and creating products that are at a much lower price point, but which have most of the functionality of the expensive devices that we're used to here.
It's difficult to talk about India without talking about the other elephant that's in the room, which is China, just directly to the north, also a huge, massive emerging market with a huge potential and a rapidly growing technology and internet base. Can you talk a little bit about some of the differences between the way that Indians use the internet and the way that it's used in China, and both at the individual level and, of course, at the larger macro level?
I would say, actually, that India and China isn't an emerging market. I think China's market has emerged now. Far more Chinese people as a proportion of the population are connected to the internet. The key differences are inherent within the differences between the countries. China's internet is, you know, a relatively closed one, whereas India's is open. You know, China's obviously not a democracy, whereas India is, and so the freedom of information is higher in India. But then China, much earlier, and this is not just the internet and telecommunications, but we're talking roads and everything else, invested in infrastructure much, much earlier. So if you go to Beijing, if you compare Beijing and Delhi, both sort of ancient cities, you know, thousands of years old, but infrastructurally, they're light years apart. And I think that that applies also to the way that people use the internet in both countries as well.
Could you give us a couple of examples of how that might be different in India?
For one thing, there isn't yet an Indian internet giant. There will be, no doubt. You know, whereas China's got its own strong and incredibly popular social networks, for example, like Weibo, there isn't an Indian equivalent. That innovation still hasn't yet taken place. It will, of course. And actually, one example where an Indian company is beating one of the big American superpowers is in transportation, where Uber exists in India, is doing fairly well, but it's not doing as well as a local company called Ola. But until the infrastructure in India is fixed, until people have reliable broadband access in remote places, until mobile internet works equally well no matter where you are in the country and everyone has access to it and it's affordable enough, it's really difficult to compare India and China.
Having said that, I would like to ask one more question. In China, there are a lot of locally produced platforms, native platforms and apps and tools. And in part, that's because they've had no choice. The Western counterparts have either been blocked or put behind the firewall or made it otherwise unavailable. That's not necessarily the case in India. You know, in China, there has been, despite what many people would say, there's been a lot of innovation in that regard, partly because they've had no choice. They've had to innovate to replace these, whether it's replacing Twitter or replacing Facebook or replacing any number of other tools. Do you see a similar sort of imperative in India, or is it happening in a different way, a more organic way?
No, it's not as much of an imperative, I think. You know, the way you described it, that China has to produce its own stuff because it doesn't have access to the outside stuff, and that makes sense. But in India, I think the big incentive for innovation, for local innovation, and for a local company to use the specific cultural knowledge of India lies in the country's linguistic diversity and geographic diversity. India is not a country in any relevant respect. It's a continent of its own. It's got 20 plus, you know, official languages, all spoken by millions of people. And within that, you've got infinite number of different dialects. So, you know, there are 500 million Hindi speakers spread across an enormous region in North India. But from the east to the west, they won't speak anywhere near the same Hindi. And they're probably quite different. They probably wouldn't even necessarily be able to understand each other very well. So you've got that linguistic and geographic diversity. Then you've got, you know, as I said, you've got the other infrastructural issues. It's not a straightforward thing to even access parts of India, physically access parts of India. You know, that, you know, lots of villages don't even have proper roads going to them, don't have electricity. Now, if you're talking about digital infrastructure, it kind of needs all that stuff as well.
Can we talk a little bit about your own research project on the possibility of your thinking about approaching the news landscape in India? And you've talked about the possibility of delivering news in comic book form. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Given that news is a popular thing in India, that people read and watch and listen to the news, they like knowing what's going on. It's, you know, it's a free country, so people do have access to information. At the same time, we will be seeing, if we're not seeing it already, this boom in sales of smartphones and people connecting to mobile internet. So it makes sense that digital news is something that people should look at. But there are restrictions. You know, as I said earlier, linguistic diversity is both an asset to India, but also a problem if you are someone trying to gain access to a market. We're actually not thinking about a market at all. We're thinking about scores of different markets. And then you've got the, and I keep coming back to this, but the infrastructure issue as well. It doesn't have the infrastructure that's needed to supply 1.2 billion people with reliable internet and replace TV and newspapers effectively. News is possible, but it's got to be visual. It can't be too text heavy because of the literacy issue. About 25% of Indians are illiterate. It has to be easily translatable, so it can't be too dense with text in a given language. So it has to be visual. It has to be something which is engaging. Now, video won't work because, look, I sit in Cambridge, Massachusetts on the street trying to watch a YouTube video occasionally. It doesn't load. You know, even in those technologically advanced environments, sometimes mobile internet in the best places will fail you and video just doesn't work. So it's got to be visual, can't be video. Stills are a problem because where do you source them from? So really, by a process of elimination, we thought it's got to be illustrated. And given that comics have a long and distinguished history of storytelling in India, it just made sense to try and do news in a simple, light, engaging form of comic books.
Hasit, you've studied innovation, and I think you've studied the principles of user-centered design at Harvard. Can you tell us how you might be using some of these ideas to approach this problem in a unique way?
I think one of the difficulties in doing any kind of business in India is understanding the idiosyncrasies of the country. India is not an easy country to work in. It's not an easy country to understand. There are so many cultural sensitivities you've got to be aware of. There are so many, as I said, there are so many languages. It's a bureaucratic place. It can be infuriating, it can be frustrating. The pace of change can be slow. The way that business is done is different. The way that people manage their time can be different as well. It's a place where having detailed knowledge of the country and of its people is an absolute prerequisite if you're going to design products for them.
As I understand it, something like 600 million of India's population at the moment is under the age of 25. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. And you know, they're the people that we're aiming for, really, because they're the people who aspire to have impressive technology in their pockets, to impress their friends, to be able to communicate with each other, to do all the things that they see on TV, they see in films. It's a young, aspirational country. But at the same time, we have to understand what the basic needs of users are. Though that 600 million isn't 600 million people who are living in cities, wearing fashionable clothes, and have necessarily a Western aspiration. There are usage needs which we don't yet fully understand, because India is a country which is becoming digital so late. It's the laptop and the desktop and the early internet's completely been bypassed. India's coming of age, of digital age, at a time when the social web is now the internet. So we have to build in an understanding of how people relate to each other, communicate with each other when we're trying to build products for them. And it's not that easy in a place like India. So what's really fascinating to me is that, you know, all the innovations of Twitter, for example, say the retweets or whatever, that are part of Twitter now, were made originally by users. And I'm really interested to see what Indians do to the internet. I mean, a billion people coming online will change the nature of the internet in some dramatic way, I think. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that is.
Hasit, this has been a fascinating conversation. I'd love to be able to catch up with you again sometime when we can talk about India again.
Yes, absolutely.
In the meantime, how can our listeners follow what you're doing and perhaps follow the development of your news reader?
I am at Hasit Shah on Twitter. I'm not, unfortunately, the most regular tweeter these days, but every time I've got something useful to say, it's probably going to be there. And periodically, I'll be writing updates in various places. But actually, really, I'm very keen to actually make something first before talking about it too much. So there may not be very much social media activity from me for a while. But once we actually build something and start using it and start testing it, then I'll be a bit more vocal about it and be a bit more open about it as well.
Very good. Fair enough. And of course, I hope everyone will follow me as I track the impact of the digital revolution across Asia, from China to India to Indonesia and everywhere in between. You can do that at facebook.com/AsiaDigitalLife. If you're a Google Plus user, just dial up google.com/+AsiaDigitalLife. I'm also tweeting about all of this and more on Twitter at psharbaugh. That's psharbaugh. For now, the best place to listen to these podcasts is via my SoundCloud stream at, yes, soundcloud.com/AsiaDigitalLife. Thanks again, Hasit. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and keep it tuned. We'll be back soon.